for the world famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. So Dr. Turner's back.
Can't just come back now.
I don't understand.
Dr. Ron Turner is going to rejoin us this evening because, as I understand it, we can get David Hall on the line. He felt he was not given enough time to explain his, I guess, position when it comes to the, you know, the elocution of scientific terms. David, is that it?
Yeah, Dr. Turner here about an hour ago. He wanted to come back on the air. I'm in the middle of dinner, and this is the kind of thing.
You know, David, if you have this control thing, it's going to happen.
What control thing have I got?
If you want to be controlling everything that happens on the show, you're going to have these guys talking to you.
Well, what did he do, David? Did he call you in the middle of a meal?
Yeah, he called me in the middle of a meal. And before you make your jokes, you don't know that I like being... I mean, you do know that I don't like being interrupted.
No, we don't know.
Yes, you do, bud. You're taking the advantage of me misstating it, and you're saying, oh, yeah, I agree with that.
You want me to agree with you?
I don't want you to agree with me when I make a mistake.
What mistake did you make?
General, I said, you heard the mistake I made, as I said, I do want you to call me when I'm eating a meal.
Yeah, so we did.
I don't want you to call me when I'm eating a meal.
All right, I think we've got that cleared up.
Well, it doesn't sound like it to me.
We've got it cleared up. So Turner called you in the middle of a meal, even though it wasn't us.
Yeah, so it wasn't you calling me. Turner calls me up, and how he got my home phone number, I mean, I did give it to him, but...
Well, if you gave him your home phone number, David...
My home phone number?
Home phone number.
Home phone number.
Margaret, I'm sorry. Did you eat any of those dope brownies?
You know what? That is so like you to change the subject when you've got one foot in it and the other one going into it.
No. My feet are not in it. Turner calls me up while I'm eating, which is a mistake, and it's not because I'm a glutton... Because I've lost 20 pounds, I'll thank you.
Okay, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
All right, thank you. Anybody else?
Well, are you expecting all of us? All right, congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
Congratulations.
All right. So, Carter calls me up while I'm eating.
Even though you've lost 20 pounds.
Goodbye. Wait, I can't hang up because I got to tell you. Turner calls me up.
No, we'll hang up.
Wait a minute, don't you...
There, we hung up, and we can move on with the show now. Hello, everybody, it's Phil Hendry.
What is he going to tell you, though?
Turner's going to call, and he's going to be on the show because he felt like we didn't listen to him last night when he was trying to explain about how he doesn't have to know big words as a scientist.
What? Are you... You're not going back on that whole The Thing. When he was talking to us about the film The Thing... Is that it, what you're saying?
Well, it has something to do with that, right? But what was it?
What are you nervous about?
I'm not nervous.
Well, you went ba-bud.
So I said ba-bud. Whatever, okay?
What did Turner call you up about, Dickman, in the name of everything holy?
He called me up. He said that,
Take it easy. Take a deep breath.
He called up. He said he wanted...
Here, I'll do it. He called up and he said that he wanted to explain about why he didn't want to use a big word.
The only thing I remember about last night's show is he didn't want to use big words because he said that we wouldn't understand them. It came off to me like he didn't know the big words, you know?
That's exactly how it came off to me, and I think it needs to be explained to him that if he thinks he's going to get away with that on this show, using this ridiculous thing about higher-level animals having a nose and two eyes... Because he doesn't know the big word for it, brother, he's walked into the wrong saloon.
All right, if that's all that this is about...
Yeah, that's exactly all it's about. That's exactly all it's about.
Well, see, this is why last night I asked him, well, what do you call that? Because he kept trying to explain it in this very pedestrian, very sophomoric way.
All right. All this has to do with folks last night on the show, and if you were with us, Dr. Turner had started the show with us saying... That this 30,000-year-old virus that was found in the Arctic frost was one of the lower levels of animals. It's a virus. It's not even at the level of an amoeba. It's not even at the level of, you know, that's about as low as it gets, if you pardon the expression.
Yeah, see, well, I'm not talking morally, though.
Of course we're not talking morally. Are you ready for this guy? Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to make an announcement.
Margaret, don't worry. I'll explain it.
Explain what?
Bud doesn't understand, Bud. We're not talking about low as in a low-principled It's low as in low, you know.
It's way down there, Dick, but it's a virus. It doesn't even have feet. It doesn't, it...
Dick, I know. No, I know.
Okay, so you, all right.
It's not bad.
No, it's not a bad virus, unless it, I guess it could be a bad virus if it was,
Well, I mean, if it was HIV.
All right, let's not, you know what we're talking about. So anyway, Dr. Tarner will join us here from the Mountain Meadow, actually from University of Denver this evening. Dr. Tarner, thank you very much, and good evening.
Well, good evening, Phil, and I'm sorry to interrupt your program, but I thought it was important.
I understand that. What were you trying to explain to us last night? I know that, in part, it had to do with separating for us what level of life this 30,000-year-old virus was on as opposed to any other kind of organism that might be found in this Arctic frost. I think people need to understand that the Arctic ice is so deep, as it is, I suppose, in Antarctica, correct?
Well, the Antarctica ice, Bill, is a bit shallower because you're talking about a landmass. So the ice in Antarctica is covering actual terra firma, actual Earth. It is not quite as thick. Although there have been core samples taken from the Antarctic ice, which are quite fascinating, and have revealed strata, which shows us carbon deposits, and can tell us something about the history of the Earth, the history of the weather of this Earth, quite dramatically.
Yeah, that's my understanding, Dr. Tarner. This is Dr. Shaw. No, this is General Tarner. I'm sorry, I did this last night.
Yeah, you called yourself General Tarner last night.
Yeah, I did, because I feel like we're almost related. You sound so much like me.
Well, I sound like a younger version of you. I think that's what I heard some people say.
Yeah, indeed you do. Although, let's just leave the comparison there, because I'm sure mano a mano, well, I want to keep it friendly.
Well, I have no reason not to have it friendly, General Tarner. I mean, General Dr. Shaw.
It's General Shaw. I want people to know we're not doing this on purpose, Phil.
I understand that.
The only thing about me, my voice doesn't crack like yours.
No, your voice does not crack like mine, and you should thank God Almighty for that, because sometimes, well, like right now, you sound like a real ass.
You're not saying I sound like an ass.
No. I'm saying I sound like an ass a lot of the time. Now, all right, I'm all done.
Thank you.
Well, what does that mean?
It means thank you that you're all done. You know.
Well, I think you've got a very colorful program there. I'm having a great deal of fun. I'm sorry to intrude on your time.
Well, let's be clear, Dr. Tarner. Although we are very happy to have you with us, yes, this is night two on whatever it is you're trying to explain, I guess is the best way to put it.
Okay, that's honest. I appreciate the honesty. Night two. Okay.
No, but we're happy to have you here, Dr. Tarner. Please don't...
Yeah, Dr. Tarner, don't... Ms. Grayton...
Excuse me, I don't speak for me.
Well...
Don't speak for me, please.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Tarner...
I didn't want to intrude because I know that your program is well known for a bit of... A bit of dysfunction. And I don't mean that in an unkind way, but I wanted to be able to explain myself and do it in a way where I don't feel too self-conscious, although Ms. Gray's comment that this is night two.
Well, we're into night two of your appearance on this program, and it's getting a little old, you know.
Well, Margaret, I think that is... I don't think that's very kind of you, although it is accurate.
Hold the line.
Well, you see, that's the kind of thing that stings. It burns up.
I think what we need to do with Dr. Please tell Dr. Tarner to hold on.
Yeah, Dr. Tarner. Yeah, you're supposed to hold on. Uh-huh. What?
Nothing, man. Don't scream everything is what I've been telling you. Go and do that stuff. Can we put this phone in another room?
Yeah, you put it in another room. Then Dickman got to come up and run back in here and say, everything's ready.
Anyway, let's be a little kinder to the doctor. I mean...
Phil, this is night two.
I get that it's night two, and I understand that we don't ordinarily have guests come on two nights in a row to explain. It doesn't usually take people two nights to explain something.
Bingo, right there. You said a mouthful there, friend, and excuse me, Margaret, for the phrase. And by the way, I think it is very, very... It takes a lot of energy and time, but mostly energy to have to explain to Margaret I didn't mean anything by saying mouthful.
I think it's just being polite.
Well, I just do.
I agree with the general, okay?
I think it's being polite.
Okay. So can we just be kinder to Dr. Turner, not General Turner, and not Dr. Shaw.
I understand.
Thank you. All right, anyway, welcome back here, folks. This Tuesday night, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We've got some other news to talk with you about. Very, very interesting story, and I know, Margaret, you've got some very strong opinions on this, as do many. A girl in New Jersey has sued her parents for college tuition money. She has sued her parents, essentially, for support, even though she did not agree to the rules of the road, if you will, the rules of the house. She was tossed out by her parents. She's nonetheless suing. She's gone to court. Now, a judge has denied her suit, most recent filing of her suit. However, there is another ruling and another attempt at it next month. But we'll stay on top of this for you. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Welcome back to world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, and online at TuneIn, as well as online right now on Listen Live on our website. We're live and mobile, either on our website or on TuneIn, so you can check out the show right now. As a matter of fact, you can listen to us during our commercial breaks as we talk and discuss and give each other a hard time and threaten each other and use all kinds of profanity. Not that the profanity is interesting, but the threats and the violence, the threatened lawsuits. It's all there. It's all here. It's all for you at philhendryshow.com. Now.
Thank you for... There is no such thing in this studio, ladies and gentlemen.
No, not much.
Not much. Get a load of you, Henry. Boy, I tell you, if it ever does really come down to that... Katie, bar the door.
Yeah, well, I'll take that. What's the new phrase around here? I'll take that under advisement. All right, Dr. Ron Turner joining us. Dr. Turner, thank you very much. We're going to get off on a fresh foot here, on a new foot. Sorry, I'm probably not getting the phrase right.
The phrase, Phil, is get off on a new foot, although the term get off is probably not anything you want to use, but I'm not going to tell you how to run your show.
Yeah, I thank you, Dr. Turner, but I would watch that, Phil.
Watch what?
You got to watch saying get off.
Oh, will you people give me a break?
Well, just can I jump in, Phil? If you're going to be involved in this give and take with your staff, do you want me to call back another night?
No, I don't know. I don't need you to call back another night. We got it under control. It's fine.
Well, for that, combined with the night two on what Turner's trying to spit out, I'm a little bit offended.
I don't believe I put it that way, Dr. Turner. I said, can you get to it because we're on night two?
Margaret, let me control the pace of the show.
Phil.
Let me control the pace and the flow of the show.
Thank you, Phil.
Do I have to take that?
Take what?
The guest said thank you, Phil.
I'm simply thanking Phil. I'm not putting you down, Margaret.
Yeah, you got to take it. Sit there and take it.
Yeah, just shut up and take it, baby.
Excuse me.
Hey!
Don't reach across me. If you're going to kick his ass, do it somewhere else.
Ow! That hurt!
I didn't touch him. You're a witness.
I know. I saw that.
But did she hurt that young man?
No, she didn't. He's always doing that.
She almost did, though, Dr. Turner.
Well, I don't want to be a part of this, Phil. I just came on your program to explain some of the comments that I made last night.
I know. Just hang in, Doctor. We'll be fine. But if you do that whole, ow, that hurt one more time, I'm going to give you, as my father used to say, I'll give you a reason to cry. Okay?
There you go. Bingo, Phil. That's what we used to tell the kids. You got that right.
Yeah, now, that I concur with.
What are you going to really hurt me?
If you keep doing with that whole...
Well, can I say something?
Yeah.
So the young man was not touched at all?
No, not at all.
Yeah, well... I'll say ow, because it looks like it's going to hurt.
Right. And this is why you're on day two, by the way, Ms. Gray, if you don't mind.
Okay, everybody, just keep your opinion to yourself for just 5 seconds. Just 5 seconds.
I want to respond to that.
No, just for 5 seconds, keep your opinion to yourselves. Now, we're going to finish what we started last night. It is not Dr. Turner's fault that we're into night two. One of the reasons, as he pointed out, is because of this asinine give and take. You going, ow. Margaret getting her feelings hurt. You, General Turner. Robert.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Well, you know, you want to speak up more.
Okay, but pick it up.
Now, you're going to take that? See, I...
Yeah, hold on, Dr. Turner. I'll pick it up, Robert. Thank you.
So you take it from Robert, but not from me. Sorry.
Dr. Turner, last evening on the show, you mentioned this 30,000-year-old virus, this a very, very large virus, as a matter of fact, the largest ever found, the largest microbe ever found, and or the largest virus, I should say, larger still than the old, or I shouldn't say old, but the previously largest one, the Pandora virus. Now, you mentioned this as a lower level of animal, as a virus is, the lowest of all levels of animals, and we're not talking about morality here.
No, I think that was a good point there made by the young man, although you're not talking about morality when you're talking about virus. You're talking about good or bad virus. You're talking about a virus that could be a virus that affects humans. It could be a disease that is particularly devastating, and some viruses are relatively benign, or they may affect only animals. In this case, a virus that affects a lower form of animal called an amoeba. And that's what I was referring to. Now, this virus, as the lowest, so when I say low, I don't mean morally. I don't think you don't call a virus despicable.
No, I think we understand that.
That's fine, Dr. Turner. That was something that Bud didn't understand.
Well, I'm just saying it for Bud's purposes.
No, I understand that, Dr. Turner. That it's not despicable.
Yes. It's kind of a silly point to make. I don't think I've ever had to make it on any other show that I have been on, and I've been on quite a few, but there's a first time for everything.
Can I jump in here, if I might?
Go ahead.
This is General Shaw.
Yeah, yes, General Shaw.
When you say that that's not a point you've had to make on any other show that you've been on, what you're basically saying is that this show is it's a little on the weird side, and we've got a whole lot of real brainless... Are you saying we've got brainless idiots here, or what are you saying?
No, I'm not saying that there are brainless idiots on the show. I'm not trying... I can see you're trying to corner me into an argument.
No, I'm not. I honestly... Because in a way, I feel embarrassed that this is the first show where you had to explain that when you say a low form of animal,
Talking, not torquing.
I know that. You're not talking morality.
That's correct. I'm not talking morality. No, I haven't had to mention that on another show, but I'm perfectly happy to mention it here. I'm trying to stay as far away from an argument as I can get.
But, Dr. Turner, I'm sorry if we upset you.
Well, I'm just trying to keep it right.
Oh, my God, he's blubbering.
Yes, I'm blubbering because I came on the program with the best of intentions.
All right, Dr. Turner, I don't mind. I don't blame you, I should say, for blubbering.
You don't mind me blubbering either, do you?
No, I don't.
Did you expect it to?
No, I did not expect you to blubber, and I didn't expect you to cry, but I understand, sir. It's perfectly fine. I understand because this show is like walking into the middle of a dysfunctional family that can't let anything alone. It's got to just keep on keeping on. It's just everybody's got to have their hand held around here, their nose blown, their ass wiped, and everything else.
I resent the whole ass wiped. I really do.
Oh, Margaret, it's a figure of speech for Jesus H. God.
Okay. Do you want me to stay on the air?
Yes, we do. And I'd like you to finish out here. Lower form of... Okay, when you say a higher form of animal, what do you mean?
What I mean, and what I tried to explain last night, an animal that's a higher form of animal, higher form of animal from the virus that was found, has a scientific term. I try to avoid using those scientific terms because I don't think the audience will understand them. Many people in the lectures that I give do not understand. I will say it's a higher form of animal. What does that mean? It's one that either swims or walks. If it walks, it has two legs or four legs. It's got a nose, eyes, and ears, and a head, and it'll... I mean...
Well, how do you say it when you're not so emotional?
Yes, imagine yourself in front of a more functional as opposed to dysfunctional family, Dr. Turner. Thank you, Phil.
Okay, Margaret.
You're the one that characterized us that way.
All right, if I was in front of it, and I'm not that you aren't dysfunctional.
You don't have to lie. Go ahead.
I'm not lying.
Hold on. Hold on.
Hey, Dr. Turner, you okay? Yeah, you ought to blow your nose. Yeah, you should blow your nose because I can hear the snot coming from you.
Thank you, Bud, for saying that. Okay, so Dr. Turner now...
Well, you see what happened? The guy comes on this program, and he's reduced to a quivering, blubbering... He's a quivering, blubbering, whimpering thing. A thing in a heap.
I didn't do that to him.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, you did. When we come back, Dr. Turner is going to explain what he means by a higher form of animal And I know what he's going to say. It's got a nose and eyes and a head that looks at you. Jeez.
Well, what the hell is so funny, Henry? This is day two. But
I know it's day two. It's day two for the reasons that I articulated, because we can't let the poor man alone. The guy is blubbering like a woman.
Oh, my God, you finally got to it. Took you almost, 2 years, but you finally did get to it. Women are blubbering, quivering things. I'm Margaret Gray. No talking after I say that.
Another day in this carnival.
I want to talk.
No, you don't get to. I'm Margaret Gray.
Another night's end.
Sissy.
World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. What, bud?
This band is all that remains.
Yeah, I know. And so what's...
He thinks they're great because they've got a girl bass player.
Well, every band that has a chick bass player is particularly badass. There's...
And why do you say that?
I don't know. There's something about bands that have chicks that play the bass.
Well, why can't they play the other... what about drums? I'm always familiar with girls that play drums. I think that's cute.
Yeah, that's real cute.
What is that supposed to mean?
Well, this is more than cute. I mean, I don't know. There's something about a girl on the bass, in a metal band especially, that works. All right.
Yeah, it just works, Ms. Gray. I don't know how to say it. It just works.
Oh, I see. It just works, huh? What about the girl drummer in, I know, the Go-Go?
The Go-Go.
You're talking about the Go-Go's, right? It's a plural.
No, it's not. Yes, it is. Okay, you're right. What about her?
The whole band was female.
Oh, that's right.
The whole band was female. All right, Dr. Ron Tarner back with us here from the University of Denver this evening. Dr. Tarner, when we talk about this 30,000-year-old amoeba, we're talking about a creature that is the lowest form. It is a simple form of life. Is that a better way of putting it?
Yes, it is, Bill. Just a point. I'm looking at you on your Phil TV feed, and I saw you slump a little bit when you said 30,000-year-old virus. You physically slumped.
I did see that too, Doctor.
Yeah, and I want to ask you, and I won't make a big issue, are you getting bored with this topic? Because this is night two.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Well, I saw you physically slump.
I saw it too, Phil.
Let me do what I do, and let's just go on with the show. And let's not take things personally.
All right.
Are you feeling better?
Yeah, I'm feeling better.
Well, he sounds like he's going to fall apart.
Dr. Tarner, this is William Tarner. This is Galen Tarner. This is Ron Shaw. God.
Get himself a Yoo-Hoo or whatever he drinks.
Get himself.
Good.
Don't yell at me like that.
Okay, Ron, we're fine. Everything's good.
What happened there? I heard the general being hustled off.
He's going off to have his vanilla wafers and his cottage cheese and his Yoo-Hoo. That's what kind of smooths him out. That levels his karma.
Boy, what a show you've got. You've got one of the weirdest. Okay.
Excuse me, Dr. Tarner. We're no weirder than anyone else.
Would you like to put some money on that? Because I've been on a half a dozen shows here over the last, I'd say, 7 or 8 days, and this is by and far... This is an experience I'll remember.
Okay, and I'm very grateful for that, sir. Now, the lower forms of life, or if you will, the simpler forms of life, how would you describe any other organism that is more developed or more advanced from an amoeba that you may find in the Arctic frost?
Well, what I say to the audiences that I talk to, and what I tried to say to your audience last night, was that that would be a higher form of animal that would not just be a gelatinous little squiggly thing. See, the viruses, which also have big names...
Oh, for God's... Are we going to have to...
Margaret?
What's her problem?
I don't have a...
Would you please? All right, I've kicked everybody out of the studio. Robert's still here. Go.
All right, you're sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
A virus is a small, little creature... It's a squiggly-wiggly thing.
What do you mean, squiggly-wiggly?
What I mean by squiggly and wiggly is that the big word that you use to describe the kind of virus that this is one that is very difficult to pronounce. It would be difficult for me to pronounce on a broadcast medium like this, or if I were talking before, for instance, a seminar, a group of other educators or students, or just interested lay people. So I say that what was found in the Arctic ice was a 30,000-year-old virus. And if you don't know what a virus is, it's a little wiggly, squiggly thing under the microscope. Now, the bigger squiggly, wiggly... I just feel like you're laughing at me.
No, we're not laughing at you. We're listening.
All right. The bigger squiggly, wiggly things are amoebas. But then when you get to the bigger animals, the ones that have legs and walk around and stare at you, any animal that can stare at you, I don't know.
Day two, huh?
Yeah, I'm depressed over the idea that you've had me on here for two nights.
Well, yeah, it's. I think we understand. Anything that can look at you is what you're saying.
Right, you know. Now, I'm not so much married to the concept because now there's some freshwater fish that won't stare at you. A saltwater fish is intelligent, and it will look you in the eye, and it knows you're there. It knows what it's doing. It knows what it wants to do. And it's looking at you, and it's sizing everything up. Now, a freshwater fish isn't going to do that. A freshwater fish floats around like a dumb... Excuse me for saying this, but I used to say this, and a lot of people could relate to it. And is Ms. Gregg on?
She's not here, yeah.
Okay. A freshwater fish is like a dumb broad. You know how they just stare, but they're not looking?
Yeah, I kind of know what you mean, Doctor.
Okay, you guys know, right?
All right, yeah.
Okay. So...
You know, there's no guarantee. Here she comes.
Yeah, I heard all of that. I heard all of that, and I will.
Go on, Margaret. Go and get your whatever it is, White Owl cigar.
So she's gonna report me now to the school?
No, she's not. I'm gonna let you go, Dr. Turner. Okay.
Oh man, that's not fair at all.
Okay, I'm gonna let you go. All right. Are you gonna be all right?
No, I'm not gonna be all right. She gonna tell me what's going on?
She's not going to call the school. Everything's fine. I'm going to just let you go because you've lost control of yourself.
It sounds to me, Tartar, like you've lost control of your will to live.
No, she's going to go and tell me, Mo.
I'll make sure she doesn't tell anyone. Now, why don't you cinch it up and man up like a man, sack up, gear up, fall in.
You're not talking to one of your
lawyers. I said to fall in. Out of hell.
Dr. Turner, I'll talk to you off the air after the show, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that guy, I didn't know that guy was emotionally kind of wrecked, you know.
Well, can I come in or not?
Come on in. Why can't you just leave well enough alone?
Phil!
Why can't you leave well enough alone? Why can't you stay out there and just keep your mouth shut?
Do you know who you're talking to?
I'm fully aware of who I'm talking to. I'm completely cognizant of who I'm talking to. Margaret Gray, the wife of Frank Gray, the big entertainment attorney, the big lawyer, the big producer. I know. I know who you are, the writer. Why can't you leave well enough alone? Every time you opened your yap, it was one more dagger into this segment of the show because this guy already is coming on here with an inferiority complex. He doesn't know these big words. He's trying to pretend like he doesn't want to use big words because he doesn't want to confuse the audience. This guy probably doesn't know an amoeba from a virus from a piece of Jell-O.
Shut up, Pickman.
Easy, bud. Okay, so the guy's already got, as he said himself, one foot in it and the other one's on its way in. And in the meantime, all you're doing is nitpicking this guy.
It's day two, Phil.
I know it's day two. I got it about day two. There's nothing we can do about it. As it turned out, the guy didn't say anything tonight that he didn't say last night. What's the higher form of animal? Something with a head, two eyes.
Oh, man. Look at how you're out of control. You weren't even the one to do this interview.
No, Mark, I've got to go with Phil on this. I've about split a gut listening to this Jack Ball try to explain himself. The whole thing is strictly from hunger.
I think there could have been a better way of explaining this.
All right, how? How do you explain it better? If the guy doesn't know...
Why doesn't he use the big words?
He doesn't know the big words. What? You know, what are you going to say?
Yo, they all got names, though, Mr. Henry, like a pterodactylus or something. You know how they say, like a pterodactyl or something?
Yes, Bud's right, even though he's not doing it right. The words they give dinosaurs.
Well, whatever. Whatever. Do you know the big word for a bird?
What do you mean?
Birds have a big, long scientific name. Something, 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 something. The genus and the thisus and the thatus.
Yeah, it's always like a Latin or something.
There you go, right there. It's always in Latin or Greek or some kind of pig Latin. Something no one could understand. Something only some genius four-eyed geek would understand.
Well, as it is, There's a lot of people that understand it. People that are in... I got a friend of mine who's an ornithologist, okay? Dr. McKernan. He's the... this is a guy I grew up with. He is the curator of the San Bernardino Natural History Museum. Now then...
Oh, are we going to hear this story again, Phil? So you grew up with a bunch of eggheads. Good for you.
Hey, I'm just trying to tell you that he's an ornithologist. And he, if you talk to him about birds, I guarantee you, he's going to get into all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, this guy Turner, man.
Dr. Turner is an astronomer. He's not a microbiologist. He's not an archaeologist. He's not a whatever the hell they call. Don't they have prehistoric or primordial biologists? Some jazz like that.
They have scientists that study the I don't know.
I think they've got scientists that study
up on animals that used to be but don't exist anymore. What are you going to study them for?
On account of they want to know what they were.
Yeah, but why? They're not around anymore.
Because they want to know what they were. Who cares if they're around or not? Aren't you interested in stuff like everybody likes dinosaurs. At least little kids do.
Yeah, but little kids like them. How come you don't?
Because I'm not no little kid.
Well.
Yeah, that might be a misnomer.
Whatever. Okay, so we're going to be back here on the Phil Hendry Show with the story of a high school student, a young woman, who was kicked out of her parents' home, but that didn't stop her from suing for support. She wants college tuition. She wants money. She wants the big money. We'll find out about that on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Listen live and mobile on philhendryshow.com. Listen live and tune in. Woo! World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
Now, what is that creature on the video computer right there?
We were showing moments ago to our Phil TV audience the Tasmanian tiger. Now, Eminem gave an interview in Australia, and in the interview, he said he wanted to wrestle a Tasmanian tiger, and there's no question that if he was intent on wrestling something called a Tasmanian something, he probably meant a Tasmanian devil or perhaps some other... Because the Tasmanian tiger is extinct. It's been extinct since the 1930s. Eminem's interview, which is online for all to read, I guess. He wants to wrestle a Tasmanian tiger during his 2014 Australian tour. He's revealed he's hoping to wrestle a Tasmanian tiger. The rap superstar will perform at the Rapture Hip Hop Festival this month. This is down in Aussie land, in Oz, as they call it. He was talking to Today FM's Jules Lund, and he said he had some very special plans. Jules sheepishly revealed that they are extinct, the Tasmanian tiger. Eminem replied, "Oh, well, maybe I can bring one back. Mark my words, when I'm there, I'm going to find one." Now, here's the interesting thing.
Eminem's a Fruit Loop.
Look, the cat's he's a performer. He's an entertainer.
Well, who does he think he is, anyway? Andy, by God, Jackson? Gonna bring back the thing.
What has Andy Jackson got to do with it? Andrew Jackson wasn't God.
Some of us thought he was pretty damn close. Thank you very much.
General, you're extremely indignant tonight.
I'm getting a little tired of people running this great country down, and they're not running the country down, but this punk ran down the Tasmanian tiger, which is not this country either, but it's a symbol of one of our great allies, which is Australia. Look, and I don't have to I'm going to explain myself.
Well, you don't have to explain yourself, but I'm certainly not going to be. I won't be talked to that way.
Easy, before I get so pissed off, I throw this whole place into the street.
That's exactly what Jack Nicholson said.
Now, before I throw this place into the street, everybody just back off, okay?
Yeah, Jack Nicholson said that in the border.
I know he did. The Tasmanian tiger has been extinct since the 1930s. It's an amazing animal. I wish to God we still had them, but we don't. And I can't get all bent out of shape about these... I can't get all bent out of shape about these extinct animals that, you know, went extinct so long ago, because what are you going to do? The people that lived back in the day were people that they didn't know any better. How do you say to someone, and when I say they didn't know any better, if they didn't know any better, we damn sure wouldn't have known any better. You know, people had to learn. So I thank them. I thank them for learning. I thank them for allowing, you know, for allowing themselves to learn so that you and I aren't so stupid. But I sure as hell wasn't born with any great love of animals one way or the other. I learned to appreciate animals to the point where we don't want them to go extinct.
What? What are you talking about?
Here you go again, Phil. No one knows what you're talking about. It's just going, yeah, da, 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 da.
Okay, Margaret, why don't you explain it?
Explain what?
Explain your great love of animals.
I think that animals are, you know something? All you want me to do is screw up, so.
I know the guy I want to talk to is Dean Wheeler. Dean is up at Nico's, which is a jazz club in the East Bay, where he's going to be seeing his wife perform this evening. And as you know, Dean has been very, very involved in his wife Emerald's career for quite some time. Dean is talking to us via the cell tonight as Emerald is going on stage, huh, Dean?
She is, Phil, and she's just stepped up onto the bandstand, but we got a couple of seconds we can talk.
Are you familiar with the Tasmanian tiger at all, just out of curiosity?
I am. A beautiful animal, a marsupial, Phil, believe it or not, even though it looked a lot like a mammal. But it was a mammal. It was a mammalian-looking, but it was a marsupial.
This is the Tasmanian tiger. When you say marsupial, what do you mean, Dean?
Well, in other words, it carried its young in a pouch, in much the same way that the kangaroo does, and a few other animals. The Tasmanian tiger was hunted to extinction by the Australian ranchers and farmers that felt that the animal was preying on its stock, and so it was a prized trophy back in the day, and it was only in this century that we learned really what we were learning. Okay, this guy with the horn again. It was only...
If you could just concentrate on what we're talking about, and we'll let you get back to the show, Dean.
You got it, Phil. In fact, the more I concentrate on talking to you and the less I concentrate on Emerald's show, probably the happier I'll be tonight.
There's a very healthy way of looking at it.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, are you looking at Emerald now?
Yes, I am looking at her, but I'm trying not to listen because I can't listen too closely.
Okay, all right, let's stick with the Tasmanian tiger. The reason why we have you on the phone, Dean, when animals were hunted to extinction or otherwise, harassed or just driven to extinction because the food, the water, and the habitat that was beneficial to them dried up, how do we view generations before us as poor, dumb idiots or as the people that sort of led the way toward our knowledge of environmentalism?
Well, I think the way you look at the previous generations is that they are us. That's exactly who we would have been had you or me or Margaret or anyone been back in those days. We would have been the same way. So if you look at the human race as a person, and the very beginnings of the human race was our infancy, and then we went through our childhood, and you might say that perhaps right now we're in our pre-adolescence or our adolescence. Have we matured? Are we fully adult yet? I doubt it. So you have to look at the entire history of the human race as a history of ourselves. And when you look at those people from times of old who hunted the Tasmanian tiger to extinction, you're really looking at us the way we were before we learned better.
Yeah, but that's not me, really.
Yes, it is you, bud. In fact, and I don't mean to be unkind, but I'm paying you a compliment, keeping you in the same general ballpark as the rest of us.
All right, let's not be cruel.
I'm kidding around, bud. You're a good young man, and I just wish you wouldn't, you know, listening to you and having to look at her right now is...
What's going on with her right now?
Yes, she sounds like she's doing a good job.
Emerald is doing a good job, but the horn player, and this is our sixth horn player in the last 5 weeks.
Why can't you get a good horn player? I don't understand this.
Why? Why do you say that?
Every time I talk to you...
Yay! Nice one, baby. Hey, baby. Baby! Nice one. All she wants to know is if the horn player thinks she's good. These horn players, I don't know what she's got. Okay, here she goes again. She's going to say another song here.
All right, should I let you go?
No. The Tasmanian tiger, Phil, is a... Hold on. Come on, baby. Come on! Shut up! It's my wife up there, okay? Oh, God.
What's...
She's whispering it again. I told her, Billy, get up there and tell her. Shut up! Hey, Mac, I'm going to come over there and shut you up in 5 seconds. 4, 3, atta, baby. Go up and tell her not to whisper it. I don't like it.
We need to let you go, Dean, because obviously you've got a situation.
No. You don't have a situation. I'm trying to get her not to whisper. That's my wife up there, okay? I'll tell her what to do, not you. Yeah. These guys, I tell you.
Dean, don't get into another fight, okay? The last time you got into a fight, you lost 2 teeth.
I understand. You hear her whispering? I keep telling her, don't do it. Don't do it, baby. Don't whisper. She whispers because she doesn't have confidence in her singing voice. And she... Sucker punch.
What happened? Oh, what the hell?
Dean!
Put him on hold. Put him on hold.
That sounded like he got clocked.
Sounds like he took a shot to the chin. I think he took one right off the lips.
What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing.
Yes, you are.
Well, he's laughing at me. I said he took one off the lips. What? Jesus, Henry, clean it up. Clean whatever you've got left of a mind up.
Put him on hold. Stay with the club, okay, bud?
Yeah, I got the manager on the line right now. What happened?
All right. How many seconds? We got 30 seconds. Okay. Stay on the line with the club. Margaret, you get on the line with Emeralda if you can backstage.
She's on stage right now.
All right. I will get us into the break. General, get yourself some vanilla wafers. Robert, do you mind me calling you Bob?
Yes.
I mean, Robert, please just you stay where you are, and we'll all be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. We are live and mobile at Listen Live at philhenryshow.com, live and mobile at TuneIn, and just about, anywhere you want to be on the planet Earth, you can catch us on either one of those apps. And on March the 17th, this radio show will transition exclusively to a digital platform to make it sound just as heavy and groovy as it can.
Well, explain to people what that means, Phil.
What it means is, and there's a fair number of people who have, you know, joined this radio show back in the 90s. The radio show itself started, and this show started, this version of the Phil Henry Show started in 1990, in the summer of 1990. So it's 24 years this summer that we've been doing all kinds of weird stuff. And we were an AM radio show, and then we were on some FM stations, and we were even edgy. We were too edgy for FM stations. We were beyond. It was weird.
You're too edgy. What do you mean?
I mean, we were just too weird for anybody. And that's really the answer. You know, that's the beginning and the end of the conversation. We were just too weird for what was happening. You know.
Well, Phil, either you can draw the traditional radio audience or you can't.
Well, in the radio world, it's very interesting because they want you to, you know, they want you to do all of these magical, wonderful things. And you're certainly open to the suggestion, but you got to get, you got to be in an environment where it's going to have half a chance. And I think that, as I've often said, you know, with all respect to the gentleman that I'm about to mention, but if you put this show in the middle of a Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity format, it's kind of like putting a Corvette in the middle of a bunch of luxury sedans.
Maybe you're the luxury sedan, they're the Corvette.
Well, whatever. It's one car is a different. You know, we're different from the other. We could be anything. It's like we're an off-road vehicle, and they're
luxury sedans.
Yeah, there you go.
I wouldn't be, you're selling yourself short that way, Phil, your off-road vehicle.
Whatever. The point is, it's like selling one product in a store that's been further. So, on the 17th, March 17th, and I know we said the 15th, but that's before anybody around here looked at a calendar, bud.
Well, so?
All right, so the 14th is a Friday, the 15th would be a Saturday. We're not on the air on the 15th, so on the Monday that follows the 14th, the 17th, we become a fully digital online radio show, if you will, or audio show or audio presentation or podcast presentation. And that will be at 9 a.m. Pacific for the live show. Now, one of the things I didn't get squared away, do we know where the hell Bobby Dooley's Sklar Brothers interview is?
I think that they're holding onto it at LEG so that you can, I don't know.
Why don't you get Bobby on the line
Yeah, Bobby, I want to get her on the line.
We had her on yesterday. Do you have to?
No, we're not going to have her on again.
Thank God.
Well, what's your problem with her? All she would do would be on here to promote the Sklar,
The Sklar brothers.
The Sklar brothers.
I don't have a problem with Bobby. I think a little bit of her goes a long way.
Well, if you've got a booby.
I got it, General. No, Bobby will be contacted. But I do want to know when that drops, as we say in the business, so that we can incorporate that into the beginning phases of our radio show. So the Bobby Dooley interview with the Sklar brothers, and then next week as well is scheduled an interview with Scott Ian from Anthrax, who will be on the Bobby Dooley podcast as well. So there's a lot of exciting stuff happening.
Now, what was the tweet you saw today?
The tweet I saw, I saw something having to do with, it was Lori Lewis. She's a great, great, great woman, and she's a radio writer. But Lori is still trying to educate the radio business to Twitter. It's a very interesting thing that's happening there. She's actually still now, in the year 2014, trying to get people in the radio business to understand what Twitter is and how to use it.
And that's weird.
Weird? I mean, you know, that's like telling a construction contractor, you know, this hammer is really a good thing. You really should be looking into using a hammer instead of your fists, driving nails, you know.
Well, it can't be that ridiculous.
It's totally that ridiculous. It's completely that ridiculous. It's like asking a guy in the automotive business, you know, they have rubber tires now, man. You don't have to use wooden wagon wheels. You can use rubber tires. They're fantastic. And I really recommend them.
So she was saying what?
Every time I read something by Lori, and she's a great writer, she's making the sale to the radio industry about things that they should have figured out 5, 6, 7 years ago. Twitter, they should have figured out 7 years ago, but maybe 6 years ago. I got on Twitter, 5 years ago, I got on Twitter, 2009, 2008, 6 years ago.
Well, which is it, Phil? 6, 7, 5?
6 years ago. Five.
Six.
Five, yeah, six.
Oh, baby.
6 years ago.
All right, split the difference.
No, don't split the difference. So it was 6 years ago.
6 years ago, Twitter was happening. People were finding it, and they were using it. They weren't using it correctly because there's a way to use Twitter, and it is not to tweet every damn thing that comes into your head. It's not to tweet a narrative like doing a book. Some people try doing that. You know, I'm going to write a Twitter book, so follow my tweets as I write this book. Nobody wants to follow that. It's just a good line here and a good line there. And I think the people that really mastered it early were people that recognized 140 characters, boom, one thought, it's done. Next thought, boom, it's done. And only thoughts that are funny, interesting, compelling. But not every little thing, you know. So while this is happening, radio is still trying to figure out how do we plug in the website? Where do we get, should we have a website? You know, should we have a, how do you do something called, what is the www, what, should we be .net or .org? Yeah, I mean, that's how far behind a lot of these stations were. They didn't know about live streaming, or if they did, they weren't quite up to speed on it. I know, because when we started our website back in 99, and that's when we started the Phil Hendry website, official Phil Hendry website in 99, and that's when we've been, you know, doing, this is like our 15th year of a subscription model. And we've raised the price exactly once. One time in 15 years, we've raised the price. We were at $6.95, and we went to $9.99, I think, or maybe $9.95. One time. And then we split the subscription model in half, and now we have two tiers. We have audio only, and we have an all access. Nonetheless, you know, we've been doing this a long time. We know how to do it. I mean, it takes a lot of manpower and takes a lot of man hours, and there's a lot of things you'd like to have that you maybe don't yet, you can't do because it's a question of the ability to do it, whether it's money or the number of people you need. But we know every time we've done something, we've done it because we knew we needed it. Like when we went mobile, like when we got in our video platform, like when we went to two separate subscription tiers. I mean, this is stuff we've been thinking about for a long time. And the radio business is just now starting to figure out Twitter, you know.
Well, Phil, this is a speech you give every so often, you know.
Yeah, Mr. H, true. Might as well just let it go, you know?
Oh, no, I'm letting it go. I see these things, you know? And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because the Samsung thing.
Oh, is that, well, now hold on for a minute, because I know what you're talking about now. It was the picture of those people, the Hollywood Oscar, the Academy Oscars. The Academy Oscar Award, right?
Well, the Academy Awards.
Yes, and the picture of the people.
Yeah, it was the tweet by Ellen DeGeneres.
There, yeah, that's the one. Isn't she the young girl that came out as a lesbian?
Yes, a long time ago, yeah.
All right, well, I'm a little bit behind the ball on these things. Now, I think she's a very, very funny young lady, but that's the little girl that came out. She's a lesbian, right?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, are you yelling about it, General?
I'm not yelling it. I just wanted to make sure I was clear. That's the young lady that came out as a lesbian.
Yes, that's the... Yes.
General.
Well, what's the big problem?
No problem. Just the way you're saying it. So, yeah, it's Ellen DeGeneres, and she hosted the Academy Awards. So, anyway, make a long story short, she tweeted that picture, and that picture went, like, viral on Twitter, and the people that came out as the real winners was Samsung, because the picture was taken with a Samsung, one of the brand-new Samsung smartphones. That was being held there by Bradley Cooper. He was the one that was taking the picture of all of the people in the picture. It was Ellen DeGeneres, it was Meryl Streep, it was Kevin Spacey, it was Bradley Cooper, it was Jennifer Lawrence, a few other people there. And that picture just went crazy, man. It went viral. And Samsung got huge, huge play. Now, this is a company, folks, that is going against Apple and their smartphone. They're making a very, very serious play for the iPhone audience, the iPhone customer, I should say. They really feel that they can make a run at them, and they went a long way, at least in promotional terms, with that picture. And so today, there's Lori on Twitter, and she's saying, look at the benefit that Twitter has had for Samsung. Look at how that picture... Samsung didn't pay for that particular... although you can pay for advertising on Twitter, Samsung didn't pay for that photograph to go as viral as it did. Samsung, I don't think, even was aware of the fact that Ellen DeGeneres was going to tank that picture. And they certainly probably were not aware that it was going to go viral. But there it was, a Samsung moment, if you will, going viral, going all over the bloody world. And they are the beneficiaries of all the word of mouth on that. And that's what Lori's tweet was about, you know.
Well, when you say tweet, how much can you put into a damn tweet? You're talking, pardon me, Margaret, that's a mouthful, you know.
Can I just say something? You don't have to apologize every time you say mouthful. I was offended the one time, but now I understand the meaning.
Yeah, you know, we're not talking...
Oh, never mind. All right, we'll be back. We'll talk more about it. Steve Bozell coming up on the topic of the young lady that is suing her parents because she wants more money, she wants more love, she wants more funds, she wants more education, she wants more tuition, and all that. World-famous Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Man, bud.
What?
Dude, walk outside if you're going to do that.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
You can't make a big deal out of it. It's a natural bodily function.
Dickman, don't you understand that people have to work in the...
And that is nasty, dude.
Yeah, you didn't have to bring it up.
Yeah, I got to bring it up, man, when you fill the whole room with it 2 seconds before I open the mic. Anyway, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com. Steve Bozell joining us here at his home in Corona, California. To discuss, very interesting story, and we were looking at this, and Steve, you're outside, Steve's on the line, yeah, there he is. Steve, you're outside?
Yeah, Phil, I'm sitting out here just enjoying a cup of coffee.
Okay, you're out at, you have a little meditation area there?
Yeah, it's a pond area we have. Last summer, it came in handy to the L.A. County Fire. They used it to get some water scoop right out of our pond here, and I've got a few, hectares of water surface here that they were able to use.
That's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, I remember when they had the giant plane.
Yeah, we
had issues, you probably remember.
Yeah, you had issues with them. Well, we won't get into it.
What issues?
I don't want to get into it because it'll be an entire big discussion.
Well, I know what it was.
What was it?
It was, can I say?
Go ahead. God.
I mean, I don't want to get bogged down.
I don't either, and if we talk about this,
it was simply the fact that Mr. Bozell felt that the L.A. County fire plane was flying by and one of the young firefighters had spotted Mr. Bozell's daughter and it BA'd the kid out the window.
Yes, and so like I said, I didn't want to get bogged down in it.
He BA'd the kid out the window.
You were here, Margaret.
I don't remember any of this.
Yeah, you do. You just want to bring it up again.
No, I do not. How perverted do you think I am?
Ms. Bray, I remember you were here because you were asking Steve all these questions about this guy pressing a ham.
I have to say that that is true, Ms. Gray, because...
What do you mean, pressing the ham?
Well, that was the whole point. This guy's flying by, does a pressed ham, and goes, ha, 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 and off they go to dump water on the fire.
Okay, so can we move past that? Because you know that this is just going to drive me nuts if we keep talking about it.
Sorry.
All right, so that was last summer, and here we are in the end of winter. And we've had a wet one, at least in the last few days, but I'm glad that you can enjoy the weather out there near your pond. Now, Steve, what's the story here? What is this story about this young lady who is suing her parents?
Well, the reason why it came to my attention is I had offered an opinion on this at the family breakfast. We have our family breakfast table, as any family would. And I raised it for discussion at the family breakfast. My daughter goes to C.K. Corona Middle School, and when I state anything at the family breakfast or the family table, she will go and report it to the school. And I try to stay as clear as I can from any of the controversies.
So can we explain to the audience that this school has been known to call you and question your decisions and comments that you've made in the privacy of your own home, even though it has nothing to do with the school?
Mr. Schrader, I don't want to get on the bad side of these people, okay? So if we could just keep this general conversation.
Wait. I want to understand something. The school calls you up and tells you what to do and what to say?
Again, General, if I could just...
Baby, that I'll tell you something right now. I'd come right out of my underwear on that one.
Well, whatever that means, yeah.
No kidding. What does that mean?
I think you know what it means. No school is going to call me up and tell me what to do.
You know, are you on speed again?
Well, what kind of a question is that?
Are you on speed again? That's the kind of question.
I took a hit before we went...
Come on, General, let's get some more water.
Get some water into him.
Big deal.
One lousy tab.
Well, the General took a hit of speed?
Yeah, he did. He's been goofy since the beginning of the show.
I think you need to drug test him.
I heard that.
I don't care what he heard. You need to drug test him.
I'm not going to drug test him, okay? I've got too much respect for the man.
Well, you want him coming in here flying on speed?
You know what? No, I don't. What I'd like him to do is come in here and be professional.
I'm still here.
Sorry.
Yeah, we'll get to you in a minute there, Mr. Bozell. We'll talk about Mr. General. He's on speed.
Well, I mean, I heard that.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Robert. Okay, so you were at the family breakfast, or the family table.
No, it was the family breakfast. The family table is when we have dinner. Or lunch. That's the family table. The family breakfast is different. The family breakfast is where, you know, we're sitting down, people are getting up, getting toast, getting fingers, you know, toast fingers. Because what happens is the family breakfast, if I could just say, is we toast probably about a half a dozen pieces of toast, or we toast a half a dozen pieces of bread, and that turns into toast. And then I cut it up into toast fingers, and that's my wife's soft-boiled eggs. Now, I line up 6 soft-boiled eggs. That's my specialty, and John, I just have them in case anybody wants them. I usually wind up eating them all myself because no one wants them, but I do cut up the toast fingers. A lot of times people get up and get a toast finger.
What has this got to do with what we're saying?
He wanted to know.
No, he's talking about his family breakfast. This is where you heard this comment?
Yes, I did. Now, no, I'm the one that made the comment.
Okay, you made the comment at the family breakfast, and what did you say?
I said that I saw this judge rule against this girl named Rachel Canning. She sued her parents for expenses and education. Can I read the story, Phil?
Go ahead.
This young lady, Rachel Canning, sued her parents for expenses and education, after she says they tossed her out of their Lincoln Park home last year. Now, that's Lincoln Park in New Jersey. That's not anything that you would think about when you think about Lincoln Park, the band.
Right. No, I know. It's a place.
Yes, sir. And so the Superior Court Judge, Peter Bogard, appears to have agreed with an independent investigator's assessment of the home atmosphere that the high school cheerleader and lacrosse player is spoiled. And so...
So the judge ruled against her.
The judge ruled against her. Her parents, seen in the courtroom, they was crying and everything. And she says her parents kicked her out of the house when she turned 18, so she sued them. And the judge asked, do we want to establish a precedent where parents live in basic fear of establishing rules of the house? That's what he asked when denying an emergency order that would have entitled the teen to $650 a week in child support and would have required the parents to pay for the girl's private school tuition, too. Now, that was all in the ruling by this judge today is the day of Tuesday. Well, I mean, it's probably, it's 11:30, so it's still today in the other places where your show is.
You mean back east?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So, in essence, the judge ruled in favor of the parents. This was an action brought by this young lady who was thrown out of the house. Why was she tossed out?
Well, she hadn't,
she had not adhered to these rules that these parents laid down. Is that it?
Yes, she had not adhered to the rules. Now, I said at the family breakfast that I felt that the judge did a good thing, and I know that I had said that emotionally because I looked up and I saw six soft-boiled eggs sitting there, and I was on I knew I was going to eat all six, even though I'd made them for the family. But everybody was getting up and doing toast. Everybody was getting up and having a toast finger. And I cut up the toast fingers myself, special. So that's what I said. Boy, I'll tell you what. This girl, she sued her parents to give her money. And just what the judge said, judge shut her down, lickety-split. And
all right, hold on, Steve. We're going to get back to Steve Bozell. We do have to take a break for a pause for the cause, as they say. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. This is a very interesting story having to do with this young lady suing her parents for money, for tuition, for child support. Steve Bozell made a comment at the family breakfast that was in favor of it, and this got back to the school where his daughter goes to school. So. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, online at philhenryshow.com. Just listen live. We are Listen Live Mobile and on TuneIn, Listen Live Mobile as well. And Stephen Bozell is with us as we talk about Rachel Canning, a young lady in the state of New Jersey. It's a young woman who has sued her parents for child support, Steve. That's what it sounds like.
It's a child support and tuition and everything like that.
All right. When we were talking just before the break, you had made the comment to the family at the family breakfast that...
At the family breakfast table. We have the family breakfast table. And I had cut up the finger. I had cut up the finger. Not the finger. I cut up the toast fingers is what I'm trying to say. And these are toast fingers that I traditionally do cut up.
God, what difference does that mean?
Would you shut up, bud?
Hold on, bud.
The difference is that, I cut the toast fingers, and I also soft-boil the eggs.
All right, so you soft-boil the eggs. Now, you made a comment that I thought was pivotal. You said you looked up and saw six soft-boiled eggs that hadn't been eaten, and that's when you made the comment about Rachel Canning. What?
I said she was a spoiled young woman, and that's what the judge said. So you could say I was quoting a judge, and that's what I told the school when I got summoned, this morning.
So you got summoned.
Now, what are you talking about, Bozell? You get summoned. What is that supposed to mean?
It means I get called up by the school at my office, and occasionally they will summon me. And they'll summon other parents. I've been there when there have been as many as I've been there when there have been as many as
You've been there when there have been as many as half a dozen.
Yes, when there have been as many as half a dozen parents sitting waiting for... Erica Dorton, who, of course, doesn't speak and no one's ever seen her, but
This whole thing with Erica Dorton, really, I have to be honest with you, if I can just update the audience. Erica Dorton is the headmistress.
She is, yeah. She is the headmistress of the school and on the board as well.
And no one's ever seen her, and she doesn't come out to meet. What is that supposed to mean?
Well, she's a very busy woman, Mr. Henry. She goes between some 6 different schools in the upper echelon. These are advanced learning schools for advanced students, gifted students, and she goes between 6 or 7 of these satellite schools that are all officially satellites of the University of California system. So she's a very busy woman. I shouldn't say no one's ever spoken to her. I'm sure they have, but I just, she has called our home, and she's done some things that I've had to discuss with the school, yeah.
All right, yeah, this is a woman that has called up and has breathed into the phone.
What in the name of God Almighty are you talking about?
Look,
General, you know, you're coming in a little late on this, General, but basically what it is...
I'll tell the story if you don't mind.
I don't mind. Steve, you tell the story. You get very panicked-sounding. And we do want to get the story told properly.
Here's what happens. When I was telling the story... And I'd been telling the story to a lot of different people. I'd said, hey, now look, here's what I want everyone to understand. Erica Dorton is a fine woman. She's a woman who has helped this school immensely. But she breathes into the phone at night, and it's got to end. I'm telling you right now, it's got to end. I got a few parents together. We went down to the house, the address that I was given, which was in Upper Pasadena, a very large home at the end of the block on a cul-de-sac. And we stood at the gates, and we demanded for her to come out. We were told by a butler that she was unavailable.
Now, wait. Hold on for just a minute here. What the hell? What kind of gothic tale is this, anyway?
You asked me a question. Have I dealt with Erica Dorton?
What do you mean you stood at the gates and the butler said she wasn't in? Where does this woman live?
I told you. She lives in Upper Pasadena.
She lives in Upper Pasadena. All right. I don't want to talk about Erica Dorton. That's a whole other... story here. I want to talk about this young woman. You got summoned to the school at 11 o'clock.
I got summoned to the school at 11 o'clock in the morning. I went down there. They said, we understand that you said that you felt that this Rachel Canning was a spoiled, rotten little piece of you-know-what. And I said, no, I never said that. I said, she's spoiled. But I was quoting the judge. And they said, well, you're directed to room 11A. And she gave the other parents the rooms they had to go to. Now, 11A is my daughter's homeroom, and I had to go and explain again to Bradley Simmerton and some of the upper echelon students, you know, what I was talking about.
And who is this Bradley Simmerton?
Simmerton.
Simmerton. That's a good name for him. What's his problem?
He doesn't have a problem, sir. He's a young boy who wants to know where I'm coming from.
All right. Well, I don't want to make you nervous or anything. I wouldn't sit still for this kind of thing.
Well, I agree with the young lady. Only to this extent, I think she has the right to expect that her parents would support her, but I would still want to slap her face. Do you understand what I mean, Steve?
I don't go with that, you know.
Well, I agree with what her essential thinking is this. She's a young woman. Her parents should support her, but I would still slap her dirty, filthy, insolent face because I don't want to be told what to do by some slut in training. Excuse me for saying, but that's exactly what's going on here, Phil.
Why would you call her that? I mean, she may be a spoiled kid. Why a slut in training?
I can see it.
What, takes one to know one?
I want to
take. Hey, go after him.
Ow, that hurt.
I didn't touch you.
You do it one more time, bud.
Why? Not hurting anybody. Sounds good.
Was the young man hurt?
No, he wasn't. She didn't even touch him.
No, it doesn't take one to know one, bud. You say that again, and the next shot will be a direct hit, and you know where.
All right, I'll just cross my legs.
You do whatever you need to do.
I'll cross my legs.
Yeah, you do whatever you need to do.
I'll cross my legs.
Do whatever you need to do.
All right, I think we've got the point made.
So anyway, if I could continue.
Go ahead.
This kid, Bradley Simperton, said, where do you get off? And I was pretty much pinned to the blackboard by these kids asking me questions. I started out, I said, here's how it all went down. I soft-boiled the eggs, and they start in on me, where do you get off soft-boiling eggs for people? Don't you know? I said, my family likes to eat soft-boiled eggs. I said, but this morning, there's 6 soft-boiled eggs sitting there. And that kind of ticked me off. That teed me off. And this kid, Simperton, and another kid by the name of Tyler, start in with, well, soft-boiled egg sounds fairy to me. And who cut up the toast fingers? I said, I did. And they said, was they what kind of toast? And so I answered all their questions to their satisfaction.
Wait, hold on for a minute, Matt. What has this got to do with anything? You're talking about soft-boiled eggs?
Yeah, well, they wanted to know how the whole day started.
Yeah, I understand that, but you brought up the soft-boiled eggs. What's the story there?
I got very upset. I looked up, I saw six soft-boiled eggs, nobody touched them. I said, I always make the soft-boiled eggs, and I always tap out the little piece of shell on the top and open it up so you can dip the fingers in. And my daughter looked up and said, Daddy, you know, I'm bitterly disappointed in what you said about Rachel Canning. She has every right. I said, well, the judge says she's spoiled. She says, okay, well, all bets are off, Dad. And she grabbed her books, got, you know, and stood at the front door waiting for me to go take her to school.
And she picked up her books and stood at the front door, so she was not going to talk to you at all?
No, she didn't talk to me all the way to school.
Oh, she just stood there at the front door waiting for you to take her to school?
Yes, sir. That's what I do. I always take her to school. Her mother's still sleeping in.
Her mother's still sleeping in, and you're taking her to school?
It sounds to me, Steve, like you are PW big time.
Excuse me. Boy, that really hurts.
Well, it may hurt, but there you are making the soft-boiled eggs with the toast fingers and taking the kids to school. And April is where?
She's upstairs. She's sawing logs. I mean, she's got to sleep. She's a big woman. She needs to get extra sleep because of the size. She's not big. She's not fat, but she's big. She's a big woman, so she needs extra Z's in order to get enough sleep to...
So that the sleep touches, so her entire big body gets enough sleep.
Yes, sir, that's it. I mean, the way you're making it sound makes her sound like some kind of a behemoth that's hibernating in a cave, which, I'm not going to say that's entirely inaccurate, but I love my wife very much. And
oh, that's not entirely inaccurate. You know, the more we talk about this, the weirder it sounds. All right.
You talk about your wife as some kind of a thing, some slug asleep in a cave?
No, I said that my wife's a big woman, so she needs more sleep than the average woman, but I said that she's not some... You know, a sloth that's hibernating in a ditch. Okay, God, man, give me a break.
So she's not a sloth hibernating in a ditch. Well, that's great. Why don't you tell her that when she... Is she awake yet?
Not yet, no.
What do you mean? What, is she sleeping all day?
She takes her nap. She'll be up and... Well, no, she'll be sleeping the rest of the night. I thought this was her nap time.
All right, Steve, so anyway... You got called to the school, and you're pretty sure it's because your daughter got upset with you that she didn't eat the soft-boiled eggs, but everybody ate the toast fingers.
Well, I said to them, I said, look at that. I made soft-boiled eggs, but you guys ain't eating the soft-boiled eggs, but you're eating the toast fingers, just like that Rachel Canning. Some spoiled, you know what, spoiled rotten to the core. And my daughter says, Daddy, you can't call her. I said, well, that's what the judge said about her. And that's when my daughter said, all bets are off, Dad. I'll be reporting to Erica Dorton, lickety-split. And I said, you watch your mouth. And I brought her back, and I said, I'm going to have to slap your face for saying, you know, lickety-split. And I slapped her face. And she went back to the front door and just stared at me like she was one of the kids. Well, I tell you,
like what?
She stared at me like one of those kids from Village of the Damned. I mean, I was very, very, I was very frightened.
All right.
This story is getting weirder.
Look, Miss Gray, if you don't like it, okay?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say anything.
You know, because I come on this program and I always either get you or that Dickman, and now you, General, everybody calling me out.
Look, at all we're trying to say to you, Bozell, we're not trying to criticize.
Not much.
All we're trying to say is, if you've got a kid staring at you like one of those brats from Village of the Damned, brother, you've got problems. Now, you know that, don't you?
Of course I know that. And I went down and I dealt with it the best way I know how.
All right, hang on, and we'll be right with you here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, talking with Stephen Bozell about the story of Rachel Canning. She is a young woman in New Jersey who has sued her parents for support after her parents pitched her out for not following the family rules, the family rules of the house. And she was thrown out. She's 18 years of age. It's a pretty standard thing. If a kid is 18 and they're still living at home, it's pretty standard among everybody that I know, including myself, when the kids were at home past the age of 18. If you want to live here, that's fine. You can live rent-free. You can live and you can eat here. But there's going to be some rules of the house. You can't do this and you can't do that. If you don't like it, you're free to move out. It's just, you know, it's not a big thing. And this girl, by the way, one of the rules that was laid down was that she couldn't date
this guy.
Yeah, I saw that. Her pants didn't order dating some creep.
Oh, so there was a boy that they didn't approve of?
Yeah, there's some kid, and they said, no, we don't. You can't date him either.
We did the same thing. We did the same thing. One of our kids was going out, was dating somebody we didn't like. We said, look, do you want your tuition paid for? Because at that point, they're in college, and the tuition was pretty damn steep. And we did not approve of this relationship at all. And there were good reasons for it, because one of them was that the other individual was underage.
Oh, my God. Well, that can be a lawsuit.
That's a lot of things, you know. So, you know, I said, Maria said, we said, look, we ain't paying for any tuition, man, to any school that costs a lot of bread if this is going to happen. So it didn't happen. We didn't get a real problem there. But, you know, our kids were smarter than this girl.
Well, you're going to get a lawsuit from that Rachel Canning. Once she's done draining her old man, she'll come after you, Henry.
I doubt it. All right, we'll be right back here on the Phil Henry Show to wrap up this marvelous and exciting topic. The Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and tune in online and mobile and listen live online and mobile. She asked me. It's the world famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. What was that, Margaret?
Oh, I was reading about it's March, so it's Sugar Shack time in Western Massachusetts. And that's when everyone goes to get the maple syrup and the pancakes and flapjacks and so forth.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
That's nice.
Well, he was talking about toast fingers, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, yeah. But we are actually we're not talking so much about breakfast as we're talking about. We're talking about parenting. And to that end, we have Stephen Bozell on the line. I'm shocked, and I'm very, very shocked, first of all, Margaret, at your opinion.
My opinion?
Yeah, hold on. I'm shocked at your opinion that you agree with this girl, this Rachel Canning, that she has a right to sue her parents.
Yeah, I'd like to know the justification on that, Ms. Gray, because I'll tell you, I put up with hell on earth. Hell on living earth. Trying to see and do the right thing by the girl. Because I tell you, you know, it's not an easy thing raising a child these days. She's my eldest, my daughter. She's 13 years old, going on 25. She's very, very smart, and I try to do my best by the girl, and I try to do my best by the boy. Especially when they have, a mother who is a massive woman, needs extra sleep. And
I got to ask you, Steve, is your wife fat?
No, she's not fat.
No, April Bozell is not fat. She's just a tall, large woman. She's not taller than you, Steve, but she's got... You know.
Yeah, she's got it going on, and, you know, I like her just the way she is, but I let her sleep in because I want her to get all of her rest that she needs, because the weekends around here can get, you know, I mean, I need to, you know, I work hard, so I need her home, man. When I get home, she needs to be home. And so...
So you rest her up, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I try to get her...
Try to rest her up as one would a stallion before you take it out on a ride, huh?
Yeah, you know...
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much for that.
What a couple of pigs. I mean, a couple of pigs in a sty. You're just as comfortable as two pigs in slop, aren't you? I'm offended.
Oh, Margaret, get off your high horse, will you?
Look, Miss Gray, it's my wife, my marriage, you know.
All right, it's your marriage, but you don't have to traipse it out here like it's a filthy piece of underwear where you're saying, ooh, look, the pee stains. Woo! You know?
What? God.
Margaret, that was...
What are you talking about?
That was uncalled for.
What are you talking about, lady?
I think every woman out there knows what I'm talking about.
Well, Margaret, if every woman out there knows what you're talking about, I think they're as goofy as you are. That's about the weirdest thing I've ever heard in my life.
What do you mean they're traipsing it out there?
I'm saying that Mr. Bozell said that he gets his wife to rest up because then he rides her and puts her up wet.
I didn't say that up. God, that's...
Well, do you or don't you?
All right, sure. But I'm not going to come out here and talk about how I ride the woman, God, man, something.
All right, you know something? This is making me sick, so I think we'll just leave it at that, that you got called into your kid's school.
And what about the toast fingers? And
I don't care about your toast fingers. I don't care about your soft-boiled eggs. I don't give a damn that you made all this and nobody ate it. Obviously, you brought up a touchy subject. I agree with you. I think the girl should follow house rules. I don't think you can just live your life the way you want to when you're depending upon other people and you're over the age of 18. This kid is 18 years of age, so she is of majority age, which means she can be sued. She can be arrested. She can, there's all kinds of things she can do, and one of them is she can go out and find an apartment. Now, this attorney, look, I'm the first one to say that there are there's a lot of rotten parents out there that shouldn't be allowed to raise a dog, let alone a kid. I'm the first guy to admit that there are some parents out there that ought to be in jail cells rather than sitting there telling a kid what to do. They ought to be put in a prison cell. But having said all of that, when it's demonstrated that it's a perfectly fine home that the kid's living in and that the parents are asking reasonable things, that there's no child abuse going on, there's no beating, there's no sexual abuse, there's nothing that, there's no criminal action at all here, just parents trying to tell a kid what to do as long as she's living in their house, and she turns around and sues them, I agree with the judge.
All right, that's all that I was trying to say.
Yeah, okay, but then you allow them to take you down to the school, have this little punk kid, Bradley Simperton, and...
Well, it was Bradley Simperton and Tucker Tylerton.
You said his name is Tyler Tuckerton.
Tyler Tucker, I'm sorry. There was a Tucker. Well, I know there's a Tucker, but his last name's not Tylerton. The kid whose name is Tuckerton, the kid whose name is Tylerton is actually Tyler, okay?
Yeah, I get it. Tyler Tuckerton.
If that's the name, I can't...
Well, which name is it? Is it Tyler Tuckerton or Tuckerton Tyler?
It would be Tucker Tylerton, but there is no such kid.
There's no such kid.
Who's this Tyler Tuckerton?
Tyler Tuckerton is the other kid.
Bradley Simperton and Tyler Tuckerton.
Well, are they brothers or what?
Do they sound like they're brothers?
Oh, all right. So that's not the same last name.
No, I don't think it would be. Tuckerton and Simperton, no, those are two different names.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
All right, well, there's no reason to get smart-ass about it.
No one's getting smart-ass, General. The two last names, they don't match. All right. Well, Steve, good luck to you. I hope April gets her sleep. I hope April Jr. learns that she has a good father in you and a good mother in April and a good family and that you know what you ought to do is take her out of that school.
Well, it's one of the top-ranked schools in the state.
Oh, isn't that great? Who cares, man? You got a headmistress there that's hauling your ass into school every time you say something wrong in your own home. She's calling up your house and breathing into the phone. You know,
what is this breathing into the phone, for God's sake?
Now, you haven't heard about that, man? She calls up and breathes into the phone like she's a witch out of that movie Suspiria.
Yeah, do you ever see Superior?
Not Superior, Suspiria.
I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, it gives me the creeps, all. It's way jacked up.
All right, Steve, good luck, man. See you later.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harry.
Steve Bozell, good man, you know.
Well, I still say the guy's as PW'd as they come.
It may be, but he had the temerity and I think the good judgment to say, hey, look, you know, this girl is spoiled rotten, man. And the school drags his ass in there and reads him the riot act, and he's got to answer to some little punk-ass kid, Bradley Simperton and Tyler Tuckerton, or...
No, Tucker Tylerton.
No, Tyler Tuckerton.
I what is the kid's name?
I just gave you his name. I'm not saying it again.
It's Tucker Tylerton.
Hey, bud, no, it's not, okay? You want me to belt you for real? We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Hey, world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
Oh, this is a cute song. I love this. Is this, what's this called?
Poison Ivy.
Yes, Poison Ivy. The minute do-do-do-do-do-do.
What is it?
Poison Ivy. Every night. This is wonderful.
Margaret, you're singing it like, it's not an opera piece, you know?
I understand that. Do, 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 do. I should put this in my Saturday night.
Are you still doing the gigs on Saturday night?
I am, for the most part, but I told Frank I didn't want to get booked into these toilet bowls. And I told him that, and...
Yeah, why is he doing it then?
Because Frank owes people... Excuse me, I have to turn that fan off.
No, thank you for doing that, because I keep telling Bud.
Yeah, Bud, you got to turn the fan off, man. How many times I got to tell you?
I'm sorry, I was getting ready for the hour.
Getting ready for the hour, part of it is turning the fan off.
It's all right, I turned it off.
Now, who is Frank? Frank's your husband. What's that got to do with Poison Ivy?
Nothing. Frank is her husband, and he books the gigs.
You're going to sing the song. All right.
Yes, I was thinking of it. Well, Frank owes a lot of people a lot of favors, so he books me into these toilet bowls, real dumps. But you know what? Somehow, week in, week out, I own the place. I don't care how many people are there. When we were at Testicles in the Harbor...
What the holy Jesus? What's the name of this place?
Testicles in the Harbor. Do you know where that is?
Yeah, it's over in Marina Del Rey.
What is it called? What, do you want me to say it again?
Testicles in the Harbor.
Yes.
And who named it that?
I don't know, Phil. Some slob. They thought it would be hip. They thought it would be edgy. By the time I get booked into the dump, there's two couples in there. There were two people. There was one man who looked like he hadn't ordered a drink in a few hours, but he looked very, very drunk. As I left that night, he was still there, asleep. It's exciting, but I thought I'd put into the set list for this week. I don't want to talk about these toilets that I'm booked into.
Bring talk, testicle by the harbor. I'm looking at it here. The guy's name is Don Testicular. And
give me that. What is this guy's name? Don Tesla is his name.
Yes.
So they call the place Testicle at the Harbor.
Yes, it's his nickname.
Damn, they call him Don Testicle Tesla.
What is he, in the mafia or something?
Does that sound like a mafia nickname? Anybody give me a nickname like that and I'm in the mafia. And brother, they're wearing cement shoes by the spring thaw. And that's no crap.
All right.
So anyway, that's what I thought. And then I heard the song, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Excuse me, but I get very, very enthusiastic and I break into dance and song.
Well, it's very nice, Margaret. I wish you the best. Phil Henry Show and...
What does that mean, you wish me the best? It sounds like I'm sitting on the last mile waiting to... Somebody playing a harmonica and I'm waiting to go to the chair. What are you talking about?
Just because I said I wish you the best?
Yes.
Yes, Danny, it almost sounds like she's on the last mile.
No, you're not on the last mile, Margaret. You're here. I'm sorry. I'm distracted. It's bloody hot in this studio, you know?
But Sammy, I told you you'd get some central air.
Phil, why don't you spring for central air for God's sake already? Spring for some central air and live like a...
Well, you going to say live like a white man?
I was going to say that, and then I saw your black face... And
God, everybody around here racist.
What do you mean live like a white man?
It's an old saying. I'm sorry.
No, well, it's not an old saying on this show, okay? How about, if you want to talk about me, live like a white man.
Yeah, I mean, on account of the humidity. That means just because I'm black doesn't mean I'm used to humidity.
All right. I'm going to get central air or some kind of a swamp. I just didn't think that usually you... I didn't think I would need it.
This is the fourth year you've been bellyaching about the heat in this sauna that you call a studio.
U.S. Senator John... how do you pronounce this guy's name? Cornyn? Cornyn?
I see. Cornyn.
Cornyn. U.S. Senator John Cornyn... The chamber's number two Republican avoided a runoff as he thwarted a Tea Party challenger and won more than 50% of the vote in today's Texas primary. Cornyn's nomination for a third term provides reassurance for business-oriented Republicans closely watching and in many cases investing in primary contests that pit party incumbents against candidates espousing the Tea Party's limited government creed. The Texas primary was... Yeah, but see, the Tea Party advocates a lot more than that. The Tea Party advocates... Like social conservatism and...
I thought those numbnuts were... Didn't those jackballs... I thought they were all about... what do you call it? You know?
About what?
I thought they were all about just the money.
No, the Tea Party is involved in a lot more than just money now.
Yeah, they're... I mean, I don't know. You know?
Well, the Tea Party is about, like, like Reagan, you know?
Yeah, not Reagan. It's worse than Reagan.
Wait. The Tea Party is a limited government thing. Now, the rest of that stuff, like, for instance, the social conservatism you're talking about, I don't know where that came from. I think that's just... I don't think it's an official Tea Party thing.
Well, what is official?
There isn't any official Tea Party thing. You know, there's just the Tea Party.
No, that's jive ass. You can't go down to the river with a bucket and think you're going to pull that out of the lake. Forget it, friend.
What does that mean?
You know exactly what it means.
I don't know what you mean. Yes, I can. Look, it's not for me to define the Tea Party. My understanding of the Tea Party, when the Tea Party first started, was that it was a limited government, limited tax thing, okay? No government, no taxes. I mean, wherever government was rearing its ugly head, keep out. That much I can understand. Then, for some reason, it got into the social conservatism. But the thing that's confused me about them, and I think it's confused a lot of people, what's that got to do with Medicare, you know?
What do you mean?
Because a lot of Tea Party people are into Medicare.
Well, I think they believe that what exists right now is good enough. And to keep that, but don't make it worse.
And, okay, so they think the whole...
They think the whole Obamacare thing makes the Medicare thing much worse.
Okay, because they were talking about how they didn't want to lose it.
What are you talking about? The Tea Party is about as... They're nuts. They're out of their minds.
All right, well, let me get... I haven't talked to Professor Emery Clayton in a long, long time here on the Phil Hendry Show. Professor Emery Clayton is going to join us here from L.A. Canyon College in northern L.A. County. Always good to talk to the professor where he holds forth with his urban studies class and history classes. Professor, how are you?
Good evening, Phil. How are you?
Good. So how do you define the Tea Party?
How do I define the Tea Party? I think that's the $64,000 question, my friend. How I define the Tea Party... And what I think the Tea Party is probably doesn't make much difference to the Tea Party, because they would tell me that that's an inexactitude. Most likely I'm wrong. But I will tell you...
Well, take a stab at it, Professor.
All right, well, I'll take a stab at it. I will tell you that I think the Tea Party is a reactionary, right-wing resurgence and resurrection of the racist... And fascist ideology of the John Birch Society. I think that there is no difference between today's Tea Party and the right-wing fascist John Birch Society that I have seen evidence everywhere. Now, you can say they're about limited government, but what that means is that's limited government means limited support for human rights. That's limited support for the Constitution. That's a limited support for people. That's limited support for freedom. Limited support for America and limited support for the flag. That's what they're talking about when they say limited government. Because the only thing that stands between you and me and the resumption of a monarchy or other totalitarian form of government is the government itself, the United States of America, the Constitution itself, the United States of America.
All right, but wouldn't a Tea Party person say to you, no, we are...
Well, first of all, Phil, I'm not going to meet anybody in the Tea Party that has anywhere near the brains you have. So you taking the side of the Tea Party, that's the best advocate they could possibly have, because you're about the smartest person that I would say I'd talk to taking the Tea Party stance.
Well, I'm not a Tea Party advocate.
No, I understand that, but right now you're playing devil's advocate, right?
Well, what I'm doing is just asking if I were a Tea Party person, okay?
I guarantee you there's no one in the Tea Party that has anywhere near the brains you have, all right? So right now we're in fantasy land. Right now we're way, way out there, all right? We're on a Dumbo ride. You know what I mean by the Dumbo ride? We're on a Dumbo ride.
What are we talking about, the Dumbo? Where are we now?
What I'm saying, General, is we're out in fantasy land. We're on the Dumbo ride in fantasy land. What Phil's saying here, the Tea Party...
Phil didn't say he's in the Tea Party.
I know he said he's not in the Tea Party, but if he's asking a question as a Tea Party member, if he's pretended to be in the Tea Party, we're still out on Dumbo. We're on the furthest edge of Dumbo. You understand what I'm saying?
No, now you've lost me.
In other words, it's a fantasy.
Yes, it's not only a fantasy, but we are on whatever ride there is in Fantasyland that skirts the very edge of Fantasyland and is almost in the parking lot. That's what I'm trying to say. Because when you're talking about the Tea Party, you have to use these kinds of extreme examples. Now, Phil said he wants to ask me a question. I said, that's fine. I said, I'd like to answer a question of you taking the part of a Tea Party person, because you're about the smartest individual I will ever speak to when it comes to answering a question on behalf of the Tea Party.
All right, let me ask the question.
Go ahead.
Would not, if I were in the Tea Party, I would say to you the following. I would say, well, you are not quite right, because all the Tea Party represents is support of the Constitution. And supporting the Constitution means, in essence, supporting people, not government.
Well, and I would say that Constitution has certain rights enumerated. And if the government does not ensure those rights, who does? you know?
Well, the states.
The states? See, this, we get back in this conversation about the states. Last time somebody told me about the states and ensuring constitutional rights, you're pulling three dead bodies out of a mud pile, three civil rights workers out of a mud pile in Mississippi back in the early 60s. That's what you get when you get rights down in Mississippi and places like that when they were fighting for civil rights. Now, I understand that we are not in those days any longer. I understand that America's moved on, or so they tell me. That's fine. But we are still having difficulty registering people to vote because states are now getting into that business of limiting people voting. We're still having a hard time ensuring the right of women to choose because states are getting into that mess. We're still having a hard time ensuring the rights of minorities when it comes to blue lining of mortgages, when it comes to ensuring education and so forth. And so I just heard a voice.
Yeah, that's Nikki. I got to take a break, okay?
Thank God, because I heard a voice. And I have been hearing things lately. I don't want to get into...
All right, so you talked to him?
Yeah, we'll be right back, Pheasant.
All right, we're going to be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Sorry, we got a little... well, you know, it's always interesting talking to the professor. There's no question about it. Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Back in just a moment. All right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, like you expected the break to end.
I did. I'm cool. You know, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, online at philhenryshow.com. You can listen live, mobile, or on your desktop. Tune in. Listen live, mobile, or your desktop. It's the new thing. All right, so we have Professor Emery Clayton with us. I don't mean to come on sounding all, you know, all urban, Professor. I realize it's a little disrespectful.
I know also, Philly, you're a humorist, you're a satirist, so I don't take too much of it personal, but I don't want any white man, and you know how I feel about this, I respect you, but no white man is going to engage in a conversation or give and take with me where he tried to be cool, you know, and tried to darken the color of his skin before my very eyes. Look, you're white, you're always going
to
be white.
And I'm not trying to be black, I was joking around.
No, I understand that about you. I also recognize very readily when a white man or white woman are trying to play cornbread on me. You know, they're trying to go cornbread on me. You know what I mean by that?
Trying to be black?
Yeah, they're trying to be black, trying to be down home. You know, I don't have any time, and I'll tell you this. This is for your ears and for your listeners. I have no time with some of these blacks. Get up in front of, for instance, Christmas time, I was in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I saw a very good musical group, and I've enjoyed them down to the years. I don't want to mention the name of the group, but they're local to the St. Paul area. Well, they're the Steels.
But you didn't want to mention them.
Well, I mentioned them. Yeah, I did not want to mention them, but now I have to mention them, otherwise people are going to think I'm lying. I think they're wonderful. I think Javetta Steele, you know Margaret.
Javetta Steele has one of the most beautiful voices I've ever heard.
Is she the one that sang Calling You?
Yeah, she sang Calling You from Baghdad Cafe, yeah.
She's got a beautiful voice.
Yeah, but there they were on stage to a predominantly white audience. And what do you think they did? Three guesses.
They went all cornbread.
Yeah, you got it right there, Dickman. They went cornbread on me. They went cornbread on me. You know.
Well, what do you mean they went cornbread on you?
Just what I said, General. Just what I said. Here I got a beautiful black family. They're singing beautiful songs. They sang Christmas songs. They sang beautiful songs. The whole show was wonderful. Everyone, and they had to go cornbread on me. Oh, yeah, you know, y'all come down, and we are going to have a great cornbread Christmas, all this mess, you know. I said, I'm going to go down to your house, and what y'all going to be doing, tap dancing for all the white people coming to the door? And one of them said to me, man, you know, it's a good thing it's Christmas, because, brother, I'd be all over you like white on rice. And I said, yeah, you and what, yeah, you and what army? And
what are you talking about?
Well, this is an imaginary discussion I had with him after I thought that. So I was going back to the car, and I was thinking of what I would have said to them, and then I was thinking about what they would have said back to me, and we had a hell of an argument.
Wow. You know something, Professor? I think you're spending way too much time with the books. I think you need a long vacation on a beach, maybe drink some of those coconut drinks. You ever had one of those?
I don't need a coconut drink, General. Thank you very much. You know, one thing about the military, I will call on y'all when I need to kick some ass, all right? But culturally, I don't need any advice. Are you telling me, a black man, I got to go climb a tree for a coconut stick a straw in it.
I don't mean anything like that. I said you need a vacation. It doesn't have to be a coconut drink. You can get yourself, just get yourself a drink.
Well.
He's not talking about you climbing a tree for a coconut.
Well, no, that's not what he meant. But what I'm trying to say is the military's for kicking ass, not for telling me to go shimmy up a tree, grab myself a coconut with my feet, which I'm sure that's what you meant, right?
I didn't mean get a coconut with your feet. What are you talking? How can you do that?
You've never seen a man get a coconut with his feet. Okay, that's it.
Phil, he hung up on you.
Yeah, of course he did. That's Professor Clayton. He always hangs up. That's the funniest thing ever.
What are you laughing about?
What's not to laugh, man? Have you ever seen a cat get a coconut with his feet?
Well, that guy is trying to say that I would have recommended he, a black man, shimmy a coconut tree.
Well, you know, Professor Clayton is extremely... He's a guy, he's touchy, you know. He's a militant. I mean, he's an old school militant, okay?
Well, if you're telling me he's like that Jeremiah Wright, I've got no use for people like that.
Professor Clayton is a very good man. He's an educated man.
No, he didn't mean you. He's on the phone.
Hey, Professor Clayton, nobody was talking about you shimmying up a tree.
No, but I wanted an answer to my question. I'm sorry I hung up, but I got to get an answer. Have you ever seen a man get a coconut with...
Well, was he laughing?
I think he was, yeah.
Oh, so he's laughing, and I'm sitting here feeling... I'm sitting here feeling like I just fell in a cow patty. But he's laughing. Boy, that's rotten. That's rotten to the core. That's Krabby Appleton rotten to the core. I'm getting a Yoo-Hoo.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, my God, that sounded like a wet fart.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Was it?
No, it was me going with my mouth.
Oh, my, thank God.
Will you go get a Yoo-Hoo with the... What?
Well, what is he talking about? I don't understand what the laugh was.
I don't know. He said that it's offensive, him drinking a coconut drink, because he thinks that somebody's going to make him go up a tree and get it with his feet. I don't know. You know, I don't drink coconut drinks. I don't like coconut drinks.
Well, you don't like coconut drinks, Mr. Henry?
No, I don't like coconut drinks. I like coconut soft drinks. I like to drink sometimes if there's a coconut-flavored whatever the hell. Sure, you know, I'll try it. But coconut in a booze drink? Forget it. No way.
Well, what are you talking about, Phil? If you're laying on the beach in Hawaii...
I don't care where I am. I don't want any of that. I don't like it. I can't take it. I hate it. I hate that crap. You know what I'm saying? I just don't like it.
Well, what do you drink?
You know what I drink. I drink tequila.
Don't you drink anything that's got any fruit flavoring in it?
Yeah, I drink a 7-Up.
No, booze.
Talk about booze, Ren. You ever do that?
I mean, what do I drink? Margarita, you know.
Not a margarita. Don't you ever have a nice, refreshing coconut drink?
No, I don't. I don't. I guess I'm just a very simple guy. I have a margarita, and then occasionally, what is that thing? What do they call that, General? The Mai Tai? Is that what it is?
What's a Mai Tai?
Well, what's in a Mai Tai?
I don't know what's in a Mai Tai. What, is it gin or vodka or something?
I think vodka's in it.
No, I don't drink that crap. I don't drink vodka. I can't stand vodka. I can't stand it. That's blackout time for me, man.
Blackout? You mean you run a guy down and not even remember about it?
No, I stay away from vodka. I can't take it. I don't like it. Say that again, Nikki?
Mai Tais have rum.
Rum? Rum ain't bad, you know.
Well, do you drink rum straight or do you have it with fruit?
30 seconds.
No one drinks rum straight. Only a guy that's on a suicide watch would drink rum straight. You have to have it with a fruit.
There's
what are you laughing
curacao.
At?
Curacao.
It's what?
There's usually curacao. Lime.
What's curacao? Oh, lime?
You didn't drink it with a fruit. What's that mean?
I don't mean you have to drink it with a homosexual. You know something, Dickman? You're the stupidest ass.
You drink it with a fruit drink, man.
Five,
we'll be back. Phil Henry
four.
Show.
With a homosexual. So she's laughing again.
No, just hold on for a minute. Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Welcome back here.
Oh, Mike, is this the Clint Eastwood? Oh, I love this. Do-do-do-do-do. This is very mysterious. Is this Deadpool?
No.
What a mental case you are.
Why am I a mental case?
Yeah, I was hearing you said it like the Elephant Man.
You did, Phil.
What do you mean I said it like the Elephant Man?
You just said no like an Elephant Man.
I'm asking you if this is Deadpool.
No, it's not Deadpool. It's Hang 'Em High.
Oh, well, excuse me. I don't have the Clint Eastwood filmography tattooed on my butt.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the bathroom.
Phil Henry Show, welcome. Yeah, that's Hang 'Em High.
Well, what are you getting all bent out of shape about?
I'm not getting bent out of shape about anything. Margaret's all, is this Deadpool? And I was laughing.
What's so funny about that?
It ain't Deadpool. It's funny to me. You know, that's a Western, Hang 'Em High.
Is that Bubba Sam? Hang 'Em High is the one where he's in Coogan's Bluff?
No, that would be Coogan's Bluff, man. Hang 'Em High is a different one.
What's that one?
Which one?
Coogan's Bluff.
Coogan's Bluff is about a cop.
Well, that's Hang 'Em High, though.
No, it ain't Hang 'Em. Are you going to let me say which is which?
I'm in the bathroom, please.
Okay, she need toilet paper?
Yeah, you're in the bathroom, so what?
Toilet paper. And I can hear the laughter.
God!
Hey, Margaret, why don't you take a roll of toilet paper in there with you?
What?
Why don't you take a roll of toilet paper in there with you?
What?
She's saying that on purpose, just... Anyway, welcome back here to the Phil Henry Show and Phil Henry Show.
I'm back. So you were laughing about what?
Am I going to be allowed to explain what I was laughing about?
Phil, that beret on your head is beginning to look like somebody pumped it full of air and then let the air out.
Yeah, it looks kind of jacked up.
Well, it's going to be staying on top of my head. We got a half hour left to go. What's the story?
The story is simply this. Someone asked you about Coogan's Bluff. What is Coogan's Bluff?
It's a movie.
Well, what about it?
I don't know. You guys were talking about Hang 'Em High. You wanted to know if it was Deadpool.
Yeah, and you got upset with that.
No, I didn't get upset. I was laughing. And then you guys said I was laughing like the Elephant Man for some reason.
No, you go like this. See, the Elephant Man, he would talk like this.
Yeah, that's exactly what he'd do.
Don't make fun of the Elephant Man, okay? That's really beneath you, bud.
But the Elephant Man's not even here no more.
I don't care if he ain't here no more. That was a very unfortunate soul, that man. Now, what about it? Coogan's Bluff was, it was a movie about a cop from Arizona. You really want to know?
Yes.
Coogan's Bluff was, Clint Eastwood was a cop from Arizona, and he went to New York to get a suspect who'd escaped custody in Arizona and was on his way to get this guy and bring him back to Arizona and his adventures in New York as this, you know, it's a classic Clint Eastwood film. He's the loner in a strange town, going in to set things straight, to set things right, get a little justice, go get the bad guy, and he's running up against all of the strange people and the norms of a very foreign place. So in this case, it's New York City. I mean, what could be better? He walks into town with his cowboy boots and his cowboy hat.
Is that the one where he goes into the precinct house and there's two gays, right?
Yeah, and they make the crack.
Yeah, oh, get him in 3-inch heels.
Yes,
that's... Oh, boy. So that takes a lot of guts to put that into a movie, doesn't it, back then?
I don't know. It's a pretty good flick. Lee J. Cobb is in it. He plays the New York cop that Eastwood's Arizona deputy sheriff has to deal with. And Lee J. Cobb keeps trying to tell Clint Eastwood's character the rules of the road in New York. And, of course, Clint never quite gets it, and he keeps... You know, he goes into a pool hall at one point in the movie and breaks everybody's head with pool cues. And eventually he does get the guy and takes him back to... Interesting shot in that movie. The Pan Am building, and I don't know what the Pan Am building is now, but isn't it at the end of...
Well, it's down Park Avenue. It's on Park Avenue, I think. It's still there, obviously. You're not going to tear down the Pan Am building.
Yeah, but the Pan Am building then, you could go to the top of the Pan Am building and get a helicopter to Kennedy.
Yes.
And so, you know, I don't know if you were in a hotel or whatever, you had a ticket on a Pan Am flight, you could take the Pan Am helicopter to Kennedy Airport and then get off the helicopter and go on the jet.
No, that's too nerve-wracking for me. I couldn't do that.
Why not?
If I'm going to be flying on a jet, I want to stay on the ground as long as I can.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, General.
You know, I don't need any more of that.
Yeah, that's too much flying around, man. You know, it's like, whoa. And going up to the top of that building in that film, you see that shot. It's a breathtaking shot of the helicopter taking off from the top of the Pan Am building and then flying on to Kennedy, but it's just, I agree with the general. It's like too much, like too, I'm up in the air too much.
Well, so Clint Eastwood is taking the guy back to the jail.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood takes this guy and then hang him high.
Well, I didn't ask you about hang him high.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What's hang him high about? You saw hang him high, didn't you?
No, I saw the Clint Eastwood movies that I saw were the ones I enjoyed very thoroughly. The good, the bad, and the what do they call it?
Oh, that's the good, the bad, and the ugly.
The good, bad?
Good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, there you go. The good, the bad, and the ugly. God, I love that so very dearly. And then the fistful of something, and you can imagine what that is. And then another fist. They have these movies about a fist. I would love... How the hell did they get that made in those days?
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
What are you talking about?
Well, you guys are... They're not talking about that kind of fist.
Oh, my God.
Well,
what do you mean, oh, my God, Margaret? You got, it's the 1960s, and there's Eastwood talking about a fist that he's got a,
they're not talking about a fist full of dollars, meaning he's got money.
Well, what was the other fist movie?
There wasn't another fist movie. The other one was a few dollars more.
Yeah, I'll bet it was.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, would you stop?
Well, how did they get away with that?
Because back then, nobody was thinking in those terms. Nobody's thinking about that kind of filth. Fistful of dollars meant for a, you know, they got a handful of dollars. This guy was a hired gun. In a fistful of dollars, he was a hired gun. And he was being hired by one family, then the other, wasn't he? He was playing both sides against the middle. It was a blood feud between these two families. Wasn't that what that was?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
And, yeah, it's a hell of a movie. It's a great, that's the movie, that's the classic movie, where he says, you're going to need four coffins.
Oh, yeah, I love that, where the mule... My mule don't like it.
Exactly. That's one of the greatest things that's ever happened in the history of movies. You see, my mule don't get it. That was great.
What? Are you talking about the mule?
Look, man, I'm not going to explain all this stuff. Just go see the movie, okay? It's a great scene. All right, Phil Henry Show and Phil... What are you looking at, bud?
Man, I want to know what it's about.
Oh, quit your bawling. Faking it.
You are faking it, bud. Just like when you go, ow.
Well...
The whole thing with the mule is the guys were laughing at him, and Eastwood comes back, and he says, my mule don't get it, and he shoots them all. There. You happy?
Yeah.
All right, because that's pretty much what happens in those Clint Eastwood movies. What else? Do you want to know about the Ukraine? I don't really want to know about the Ukraine. A quick reminder, as we have mentioned throughout the show, I want to continue to remind you that on the 17th of March is when we... begin the new Phil Henry Show, a digital online show that you can listen to live, mobile, or your desktop here at philhenryshow.com, or listen to live, mobile, or your desktop at TuneIn. We will have a podcast of that show each and every day, posted the same day within an hour of the end of the show. So we'll start at 9 a.m. The show will go to the very latest 11. It'll generally be about a 90-minute to a two-hour show. And then it will be posted within an hour, maybe two, of the end of the broadcast. So podcast the same day. It will be on iTunes for 5 days.
So this will be a free offering for 5 days.
Yes. The podcast of each show will be available free for 5 days and then goes behind the paywall on that sixth day. Now, Bobby Dooley's podcast featuring forthcoming the Sklar Brothers and the Frank Gray podcast and the Steve Bozell Injustice Files, all of those are going to be incorporated into the new Phil Henry Show commencing on March 17th. So all of those little podcasts will be there as well as we're trying to kind of organize things. Because we got a million and one different podcasts out there, and we just want to...
Now, why do you have a picture of Timothy Leary there?
I don't know. We got into a conversation about Timothy Leary and... and Eldridge Cleaver at some point in the show tonight, off the air. I have no idea, other than the fact that I read both their books. I read Timothy Leary's biography, which is called Flashback, and I read Eldridge Cleaver's biography called Soul on Ice, only because I'm a biography fan and I'm a true story fan. But the one that I'm reading now is way out there. I'm going to tell you guys about this book, and I'm not going to get too heavy into it, but I found this thing by accident. I was looking for something else, and I found this book by accident. It is the story of a reclusive millionaire, a woman with probably billions, who I believe is no longer alive but lived up until very recently, past the age of 100. Her family goes back to the very beginnings of this country. In other words, it's a story that spans from a log cabin in Pennsylvania to a penthouse post 9/11. This is a woman whose lifespan incorporated witnessing the 9/11 terror attacks and having a ticket for the Titanic. She never got on the ship.
You're kidding.
No. The last name is Clark. He's got a very unusual first name. The book is out. It's been out for a while. I'm going to read it. I'm going to report to you guys on it. I'll post it online at some point, either on our website or on Facebook. But I'm really looking forward to this thing.
What? She had a ticket on the Titanic.
Yeah. So she must have been, I believe that she was old enough to be not just a baby, but I believe that she was at least a child and was supposed to be on the Titanic and never got on this ship. And she now, a very, very elderly woman, saw from her penthouse the panic in the streets of New York following the attacks of 9/11. Can you imagine your life spanning all of that history? It's crazy, man. It's crazy. And her family, well-known, very rich, and deep, deep roots in this country. All right, we'll be right back on the Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, for our final segment and like that. So stick around. Lots more where all of that stuff come from. Check out our online store, too, by the way, the Je T'aime Lingerie Rudy Canosa La La Lovely Pink Ladies Tee is in stock, ladies. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. I found this book. It's called Empty Mansions. Bill Dedman wrote it, the winner of the Pulitzer Prize, and Paul Clark Newell, Jr. This is amazing. It's the story of, I don't know how you pronounce this.
Let me see this, because I'm familiar with these things. Huguet, H-U-G-U-E-T-T-E. Is her first name Huguet or Huguet Clark?
How do you know that's right, Margaret?
Because I said it's right. Is that good enough for you? Anybody else? You?
Well, Margaret, you don't have to back us up.
God, man.
Well, I don't like you guys giving me this song and a dance. Huguet Clark. And she was a very, very wealthy woman. She took the family's money and just peed it away, if you'll pardon the expression.
What do you mean?
I mean, she took a lot of money and spent it willy-nilly.
Really? This book, I don't know why. I know why it fascinated me, because it purported to be a book about a family whose life, the family's life, goes to the very beginnings of the country. I'm really fascinated by families like that, and I'm fascinated by especially these prominent families. You know, the Astors.
The Astors, that's a family of some of the biggest horses' asses you've ever met. But, by the same token, some of the most generous. I knew an awful lot of the Astors. I knew Clarence Astor. I knew Frank. Frank's my husband. Frank knew Clarence Astor. Genevieve Astor. Marvin. Melvin.
Well, who are these people?
Who are these people? The Astors.
Melvin Astor.
Yes, Melvin Astor. What is with you?
Well, Margaret, just because they got the last name.
What about Mary Astor? What about her?
What about my Astor? How about that?
Hey, watch it, will you?
Well, I'm getting sick of this.
Hey, Margaret, you know something? You ought to quit making things up.
I'm not making anything up, you freak. I'm telling you right now.
Wait a minute. Don't call the general a freak.
No, no, it's all right. It's okay. Don't get nervous.
You want a piece of me?
Hey, Margaret, I'm going to fire you in 30 seconds if you don't sit down.
All right.
God, what is with you guys?
I didn't do anything. All I did was I asked her about this Astor, Melvin, Marvin. I don't know who they are.
You know full well that Mary Astor is not an Astor.
I don't know who the hell she is. I know she was an actress, right?
She's an actress that had some name and she changed it to Astor. I don't know who Melvin Astor is either.
Well, now you know. I know Melvin Astor.
Is he an Astor?
Do you want to start this all over again, Phil?
All right, so he's an aster.
Yes, and the asters, their roots go back years in this country. Old Man Astor, as you know, Phil, was a fur trader.
Yeah, the asters were fur traders, and then...
And then real estate. And very, very sharp real estate cookies they were. The old man, Jacob Astor, bought up real estate there on the lower east side of New York, along where the old docks were, and the Bowery and so forth. And then that's where they made their money.
Well, he was a furrier, and this is back when trading furs was a big deal in this country. It's funny to think on times when there were certain commodities that fetched an enormous amount of money, and these were times, the early 19th century, where furs were, they were it, man. And that's where you made a lot of money, if you were a fur trader and a fur seller. And I suppose if you were a fur trapper, you made a fair amount of money. Obviously, that has fallen from favor because of our concern for the endangered critters of the world.
Yeah, but people are still wearing furs and everything. Like, my grandmother, she had a fur. She thought to do everything like that.
Yeah, well, what kind of fur?
Well, I mean, what sense do you mean?
What do you mean in what sense?
Why don't you clean your act up, bud?
She had a mink stole. And
yeah, mink stoles were big time, man.
Sable stoles were very, very expensive. Used to be a sign of great wealth if you had a mink stole or a sable stole.
Yeah, but not anymore. People don't like to wear those, you know.
What about Kim Kardashian?
What about Kim Kardashian? She's a big tub of guts that'll walk around with a dead man's flesh on her if he's...
God, Margaret.
Well, she does.
Well, this Kim Kardashian, is she the one with the big ass?
Yes, that's the one.
As she walks around with those furs on, I think I saw somebody dump paint on her or some damn thing.
No, there was a lady that dumped some powder on her or something. I don't know what it was, but I don't know. It's hard for me to hard for me to read the Kardashians. There's no question that they are a version of American royalty. Wouldn't you say that?
Well, I think they are, but this woman, the mother, Kris. She's at nightclubs. I don't like the idea of that old bag hanging out at nightclubs, you know.
Yeah, she's younger than you.
Let me tell you something, bud, before I reach over there and take your face off. I don't hang out in nightclubs either. I have a husband and a son. If I wanted to go out and I wanted to trip the light fantastic and have a cocktail or three, I would. But I'm not hanging around some of these clubs where the 20-something kids go, like I'm some old, dirty, vodka-soaked floozy.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Boy, you just... I'm telling you,
Margaret, you just took the measure of that woman.
That was pretty cruel.
What's cruel about that?
Would you get over here? Where are you going?
You mind me going and taking a dump?
God! She's getting more and more loose, and...
Margaret, you can't talk that way just on account of we going on the 17th.
What?
She's getting really vile, man.
You're not even watching your language anymore.
Everybody else gets to talk that way. Any toilet paper? Oh, you brought it in. Thank you.
How many dumps does she take in the show?
Probably about, I don't know, three or four.
This is my second.
God. All right, so, well, there you go. I mean, but the furry thing.
Talking about the Astor.
Yeah, that guy, old man Astor, he was a furry. Then they bought the real estate up. Now, the Vanderbilts, I saw this thing on the tube the other night. It was really good, man. The men who build America. Did you see this?
That's the five guys. Who are the five guys?
I can't remember now, but it was Vanderbilt, Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan. God, man. And I know that there's people out there right now going, Phil, it's this one. It was J.P. Morgan. It was Carnegie, if I'm not mistaken. And there was one more. But each man represented a different industry, and the Vanderbilts were shipping, obviously, the Commodore. That the Rockefellers were big into railroads and then oil. Carnegie and Morgan, they had their thing going on. It might have been banking, but it's truly a fantastic story. If you want to learn about this country, it's important to obviously learn the story of the political history of the country is very, very important, but it's even more important and probably more fascinating to read about the industry the fortunes that were made and lost, the men that almost climbed the mountain and then fell down the mountain, man. I mean, I'm telling you, some crazy stories there. All right, that's it for tonight's show. We appreciate you guys hanging with us. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Don't forget the 17th of March. That's D-Day, baby, when we go to a 9 a.m. Pacific start on the new world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 9 a.m. Pacific, and it will be 12 noon Eastern. All right, we'll see you tomorrow night.